everybody. Welcome. It's time to another edition of Inside Lion Athletics. Charlie Chitwood here, your host, and it's kind of special. We're getting near the end of the year. There's a lot going on, and we haven't talked to Jim Curry in at least 2 or 3 weeks. Jim,
About
welcome.
2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks. I think.
Welcome back to your show, boss.
Oh, man. It's good to be back.
It is.
It's
It
good to see
is.
You again.
Likewise, we just keep peering into the lens and we'll figure it all out. Dude, there's so much going on, but let's start with a highlight. Night of Champions is coming up quickly, just what, 2 weeks away, I think.
So it's Saturday, May 16th.
Yeah.
Signature scholarship gala event for the year. Done it for a few years now down in Rockwall. We're almost sold out. We have got more seats, more tables than we've ever had before. That continues to grow. The Rockwall Hilton's become a great partner of ours in this event. The silent auction will go live next week, I believe.
Okay.
For people to get a preview there and start bidding. And you don't have to be at the event to participate in the silent auction. So that's a good note for everybody there that wants to look for some items there. But we're excited. It just continues to grow, continues to get bigger and bigger. And again, we've really enjoyed the time down there at the Rockwall Hilton. So excited to bring that back here to kind of cap off the spring a little bit.
Hey, tell everybody, you know, you've been going there the last 2 years. Before that, we always had Night of Champions on campus, and it was a totally different kind of event for people. The move over to a casino night and just a pure fun night like that, it's paying some dividends, hasn't it?
It has. We've had great response and great return on that. And I think part of it too is, you know, finding that kind of middle ground between, you know, campus and the Dallas community and being able to kind of get people there. You know, we know the effects of the lake, right? And I-30 and all the traffic going on. So we can't go too much further west than that. But it's kind of a nice little middle ground. But more, I think more importantly, it gives us the look and the feel and the presentation that I think we're going for with that type of event. And you know, I think it also allows us to get folks together in kind of a space where, you know, if you want to take advantage of one of the room nights there and kind of make a night of it, you can. So I think all the real action happens at the hotel bar afterwards when the event's done, because the party keeps going from there. So
that's where the bragging starts.
Exactly. So, you know, I think as great of the spaces that we have on campus, it's a different space. It gets us the ability to get some other folks maybe here to the event in Rockwall. And again, I think the look, the feel, the elevated kind of presence is what we were going for. And that helps us deliver that.
Good deal. And that is Saturday, May 17th.
May 16th.
16th.
Saturday, May 16th.
That's
And
right.
Like I said, we are close to selling out on tables. So we are close. So if you're waiting, don't wait any longer.
You know, the first year, they raised $100,000, and everybody thought that was absolutely the smash. How much did they raise last year, Jim?
So, oh gosh, off the top of my head, I want to say it was close to 160, 170 is where we landed last year. So it's grown every year, it continues to grow. And, you know, we've built really off that first year. So, you know, that was an event that obviously was created prior to my arrival, but we really leaned into it and continue just to try to grow it and continue to make it better. I think we've been able to do that, and we've seen good return on that.
Very good stuff. Hey, everybody likes party.
Hey, who doesn't, right?
That's right. So from all that, there's another kind of cool thing coming up. You know, towards the end of the year, everybody's counting skins. And one of the skins you count is how many all Southland Conference performers come out of our program. I think that our all-time record in the D1 era, I believe Avi told us it was 38, and that was in our very first year at D1. Mm-hmm. But the Southland Conference and Division One looked a little bit different then.
Yeah, it did. It looked a lot different then, for sure. Yeah, so we're kind of mentioning that just because, you know, today, we or this week, I should say, we got some new honorees I recognize Tatum Wright, first team all conference in softball, her second
Hey.
year being on that team or being recognized by the SLC. And then Davis Siebert, who was not only on the second team for men's golf, but also was named newcomer of the year in the conference. So, you know, again, just continuing to pile up accolades for our student athletes here, continuing to kind of see that proof of concept of our ability to have a presence and compete in this league. And, you know, you mentioned that first year in the league, we're pacing right now. We got track to go, outdoor track, but we're pacing right now to really potentially eclipse that high watermark for us that happened in 22-23. And it's noteworthy because obviously the league was smaller. There were less teams in the league then. And we obviously know the quality of the league has gotten much better top to bottom every sport over the last few years. And we've been able, that's just not a qualitative or an anecdotal assertion either. You know, we've quantified that. You know, it's interesting because we've looked back at our, you know, aggregated win loss total over the last, for this year, across all of our team sports, and we're up almost 10 percentage points in the win column compared to last year in non-conference play. In aggregate, we're up about 3.5% compared to last year. So, you know, I think it speaks to really the quality and really the depth and parity within the league. When you look at just some of the standings, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to see every team kind of up and down in different spots in there. You know, SFA's had a good little run here, no doubt about it, tipped the cap to them this year. But, I mean, when you look around, you'll also see them towards the bottom of the table in some things. You'll see them at the top of the things. Same thing goes for schools like us and everybody else. So, you know, we've got a really good AD group. We've got schools that are really committed to what we're doing here, and it's showing up in the outcomes and the results and the standings sport to sport.
Outstanding stuff. So with the Southland Conference honors piling up, that'll go through, I guess, through the end of June when track finally winds down at the Natties.
Yep. So track championships, they're kind of down to their last, you know, kind of qualifier meets. And then they have their conference championship that same weekend we talked about with Night of Champions. So that would be the 14th to the 16th of May. That's going to be down in Nacogdoches. And then we feel very confident we will have multiple student athletes qualify for the NSAA regional. So again, something we couldn't qualify for in previous years, but, and track probably last year, I think we're talking to George, would have had 12 plus last year. We will qualify probably around the same number this year for the regionals, which will take place in Arkansas. So that'll be our third trip to Arkansas this year. One for postseason. We did we went there for regular season as well. But we were there for regionals and cross country. We were there for national championships in indoor, and we'll be there for regionals and outdoor track in addition to our regular season competition there. So we're getting very familiar with the folks in the hotels and restaurants in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I can tell you that.
That's all right. Well, you get that rewards stuff going that way, Coach, and maybe get something out of it.
Well, particularly the number of people we're taking too, right?
Yeah. Those medals are awesome. So those are kind of the highlights of what's coming. I mean, I think you and I have settled on July 1 being New Year's Day for basically most Division I athletic programs.
Yeah, the calendar's really moved. We've talked about that a little bit here. You know, we now would track being eligible for NCAAs. You know, they'll probably, or they could have the potential to go into June all the way through the national championship meet, which is middle late June. Then, you know, we talked about this before, but the number of teams that are reporting in July now, soccer reporting July 15 for their first training session for the preseason, the football and volleyball reporting in late July. So, you know, I think whereas before we probably thought about August 1 as maybe the calendar flip, it's really July 1 probably now. And, you know, I think for a long time, we've all kind of realized working in college athletics, particularly D1, once you get back from the 4th of July holiday, it's kind of, everybody starts to kind of lock in and really you start to feel the pressure of the fall starting to arrive. And that will certainly ramp up with these earlier report dates.
All right. Interesting. The last time I was over on campus was last week for the final softball tournament, and I know that the hallways in front of the Lion Champions room have been full of tall people. Tim, basketball recruits have been on campus, men, women, both, and some of them aren't recruits anymore. How's
No, got some signees now.
Saw a little bit of that. What can you tell us about that? I know the coaches are either still working on a few or they're just exhausted somewhere getting over having finally wrapped up their list, like I think Coach Val has done.
So Coach Val's wrapped up. Both are having scoring some wins, that's for sure. And Coach Val, she's done at this point. We're starting to announce all our signees, and I think the theme of those signees is going to be bigger. There's no doubt about it. And I when you look at just kind of the quality, that where they're coming from, their accomplishments or what they've been able, their production. It's a reason to get excited about what's coming for women's hoops. This comes on the heels of also signing a really spectacular player out of Lancaster, out of the high school ranks. She was actually the 6A state championship game MVP, and they won the state championship against Austin Westlake, who was 42-0 going into that game. So this young lady out of Lancaster is really good, and she this also kind of adds to the six that we retained before going into the portal, which are really awesome six players that are kind of serving as kind of the core, the nucleus. So, I mean, it's might be April, the end of April, but I'm so excited to get to November for women's hoops, just because of the quality of what they've been able to do in the recruiting space. And again, I think it also goes to Val has spoken to this probably on this show, but has certainly shared it with donors and folks who we've met with. We're continuing to see the quality of the student athlete that we can recruit elevate as we continue to move along. And people, I think, can see what we're doing, our trajectory, not just as an athletics department, but an institution. And then, also just return on the investment that we're making into athletics generally. One of the things too, we're going to get one of these transfers that are coming in from Tarleton. She's a forward. She's also a construction engineering major, right? I mean, so again, we talk about quality student athletes, and you're going to see that across the board. But she was kind of just one of those examples that kind of jumped to mind that is going to bring us some great athleticism and skill on the court, but also some skill in the classroom as well. We mentioned the men's side. We talked, I think, before. We're going to have to update the pronunciation guide here, because we're going to have a heavy European influence in what we're doing. But I would say that that's unique to what we've done here in athletics. We've obviously seen a lot of success across multiple sports in the international space, and combining that with our domestic kids and our Texas students as well. So men's hoops will have a much more international flavor to it, I will say. But their international players who have played at a high level in Europe are really fundamentally sound, bring great skill and size, and honestly, just a lot of playing experience. So it's a little bit of a different style than probably what we've seen, but we'll figure out how to kind of incorporate and weave that into what we're doing next. But I know Jarrett's really excited about what he's doing there. I don't think we're ready yet to announce all the signees in aggregate, but we're start they're there they are coming in, so we're really excited about what's happening there too.
If we get a number of them, we just might finally learn how to do the Euro step, Jim.
I got a feel a lot of these guys know how to do it.
So they'll come in and do that, and man, and if they're just hard to pronounce, well, Vanna White, is she still doing her show? Maybe we can buy vowels from her.
I mean,
Price
or it's
is
you,
Right.
or
What do you?
you're such a suitable replacement for Vanna.
I think I'm good looking. Not that good looking, though. Not that good looking. So with the, especially with the guys, it's really not so ma it doesn't matter for this conversation who we got. It's just that it's a little bit different attack mode that Rose has had in his recruiting and how he gets prepped up for the next year.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That's exactly it. So,
Does that
and
5 years part, I'm sorry, I'll let you
Yep.
go. The 5 years part that the NCAA is coming up with, does that have an impact on it, any yet or?
Not yet, but it's very clear that that is starting to be it's starting to kind of come into the conversation, and I so much so that the NCAA had to put out some guidance this week relative to that. So for those that may not be familiar, moving to a 5-year eligibility window, and you hear people saying kind of 5 and 5, it's not really 5 and 5, although I understand why people say it. It's just 5 years. So whatever happens in that 5 years happens. And there's the real thought process is here. Let's try to eliminate waivers. Let's try to re reduce litigation exposure to eligibility rules and decisions out of the waiver process. So, this is probably a little bit of the benefit of being, on the Football Oversight Committee, is I get a little bit more, kind of first look at some of the things that are happening and hear about it. But I can't get into too much of it, obviously, as it's still in some development phases. But the general the general hook on it is that, and this is public too, so I'm not sharing anything that isn't already out there, but is that they believe that the age-based model, particularly because it's seen in other sports as well, but the age-based model is generally a defensible model in courts. And so that's why you're talking about 5 years predicated on the 19th birthday or graduation from high school, whichever's earlier, and go with no waiver. So one, that's a defensible model. And then two, beyond that, what they're seeing is that these waiver decisions are becoming the source of the additional litigation that's occurring in athletics. And so that's exposing the eligibility rules generally to more scrutiny, particularly in courtrooms. And so if they can eliminate waivers and get out of these, kind of one-off things that happen, then and everybody trying to cite precedent or what happened in another case when the facts sometimes aren't exactly the same, but you can't get into the nuance on it on decisions that are just kind of public, it can really kind of clean up the litigation environment. So because that has so much, because they feel like there's enough strength in there in that position, then that's why I think we see the speed at which they're trying to move here to get this done. And so I mean, we're very likely going to take a vote on that this summer, at the NCAA cabinet level. And but there's a because it's getting so much traction so fast, there are current seniors who are about to exhaust this spring in the 25-26 year that started asking questions. Coaches are asking questions, and the NCAA came out very clearly and said that's not part of what we're looking at. Now, the implementation of this, if it were to go through, it still has to be sorted out. And whether or not that would include kids that are currently in school or not, TBD. I don't have any information, at any, in anywhere that could answer that question definitively. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, as I've kind of said to the folks here on campus, let's take a step back and kind of look at how we operationalize this on campus and how it can help support strategic initiatives of the university. So we know that in Division I, as an industry across the board, all sports, that student athletes graduate have a graduation success rate of 90%. So it's obviously very impressive. Of those graduates, the 72% of them are graduating in 4 years or less. So a 5-year window opens up opportunity for potentially for students to pursue master's degrees, or obviously try to support, on-time graduation for student athletes generally from their undergrad, which again, we're already doing at a great rate anyway. So all that to say, it's interesting to see how it can kind of work together in the larger university ecosystem as well.
It isn't the momentum behind this a little bit in having an answer based off of all the other youth sports across America, especially in Olympic sports. But just take soccer, for example. You've got under 19, under 18, under 17. Well, If you make it, all right, well, you're going to be under 26 when your eligibility is going to run out in college. And it makes that 5 years pretty easy to, well, what's the start point?
Correct, exactly. It makes it
Yeah.
very, it makes it much more objective, the window of time, when the eligibility clock starts, what have you. And again, it takes the waiver process out in the and really the subjectivity that can come with that, understandably. And again, it's not a precedent, it's not a novel concept. Like you said, you're that's a perfect example. The U16, the U20, the U25, like that. These are models we've seen used not just in the US, but across the world in
Sure.
administration of sport and sport eligibility. So it's, I think it's probably smart to look to that as a potential example for how we can create a more sustainable eligibility model here.
Okay. While we're on the subject of things that change in college sports, how about another, what is it, 12 games in the championship basketball, the NCAA
Oh
tournament?
yeah,
Is it
12
just for
teams.
the men's tournament, or are they going to do it in both? Are they going to increase the women's side as well?
I mean, I think they would have to. You've seen when it ha when one thing kind of happens on the men's side, they'll pick it up on the women's side and explore whether or not it makes sense. Now they could, in theory, I think, decide that's not for them, but again, it's certainly within their purview to look at it for sure.
Yeah, okay. What do you think about the extra 12 games? I mean, it's basically one more night of tournament, but
Yeah,
it's going to be a
correct.
lot of travel for 12 teams.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I'll say this, like, I think we talked about this before. I don't know if I have a strong position on expansion of the tournament one way or another, so long as it doesn't dilute the excitement that comes from it. There is an argument to be made that as Division One membership has expanded, does it make sense for us to explore access beyond the 64, now the 68, because of just the growth of the membership as a whole. You see routinely across all three divisions changes to the access rate or access percentage for schools or for sports and access to the championship as sports sponsorship numbers go up. If you see more school, that happened in FCS football recently. We grew the size of that. Softball tournament in D2 grew a couple of years ago as a result of growth of number of schools that are sponsoring the sport. And so this is not a novel concept in any way. I think it obviously gets more attention because of what it is. But again, I think as long as we can preserve the energy, the excitement, and everything that's beautiful about March and college basketball, whether it be the men's or the women's, then it's going to be a good thing. So, I would hope that it would provide more access for schools outside the Power Four, only because I think there's a lot more deserving teams, or teams that kind of get left out that need consideration. That Indiana State team a few years ago is one that kind of comes to mind. You look at the NIT Final Four this past year. I think maybe all four, if not definitely three, maybe all four were non-Power Four teams in that. Even that McNeese women's team last year, beat Texas A&M in the NIT. So you see quality results all over the place from schools outside the Power Four. So I've got no doubt it will provide more access to Power Four schools on the bubble, and I think that's part of the intention.
Yeah.
But I do like that, or I do hope, I should say, that it can also do that for schools outside the Power Four as well.
Can you imagine being with an expanded tournament field and you're the only team from the SEC that doesn't get in?
Well, in the SEC,
You know?
a couple of years ago, SEC got every school into the Division One softball tournament. So, I guess good that someone wasn't left out in that regard, I guess, back then,
Yeah.
or else you'd be
Well,
kind of maybe getting made fun of at the next coaches meeting. I don't know.
just a tiny bit. Hey, you brought up softball. Got some changes in Lions softball that if fans been following, it's not totally unexpected. Things just haven't really picked up steam, and it's time to try something new. What are your thoughts? I mean, you're the one that's had to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't have this conversation without talking about softball, obviously. And had to deliver some unfortunate news on Tuesday this week that we're gonna make a leadership change there. I've just great people in that program. So, it's hard when you like the people that you work with. When we look at some of the other outcomes that we've enjoyed across other areas of the experience for our student athletes have been really positive. That's what makes it hard. And these are real people with real families. I've talked to the student athletes as well that day, and they're asking real questions about what this looks like for them moving forward. And then met with our recruits and our signees later that night, and same thing, right? So, one of the most important things that we do in athletics is hire head coaches and evaluate head coaches, because they have such a direct impact on the experience of our student athletes. And so anytime that you make a change, whether it's hiring or making a leadership change or anything in between, it obviously carries a lot of weight. So a tough day on Tuesday, obviously, but excited about what's possible here in that particular sport. This is a program that's only 12 years old. Until the last few years, had never had a losing season. And so this is not just a sport that is, I think,
A
it's
Title
obviously a
IX filler.
sponsor. It's
Yeah.
one that we can really excel in. And so, we'll always look for ways to continue to try to create the conditions that are right for that. We know we have some things in that program that are really that give us a heck of an advantage. We're obviously in a great footprint with the talent and at the youth level and the high school level, travel ball level here. We've done a great job of being able to kind of reach outside of the footprint as well, and at least attract talent to come here. And not just in softball, but in all sports, frankly. The facility itself is one of the best in the Southland. There's no doubt about that. And we'll continue to ensure that we make sure that it stays that way. There's some projects, there's some deferred maintenance projects that obviously we know we'll keep up on. And there's some things that we can do to elevate what we're doing in that space right now as well. We feel really good about where our operating lines are. We know that we're in the top half of every operational line we've got as we go into next year. That's something that's actually a kind of a point of emphasis for every one of our sports. And by the time we get to the budget year for next year or the fall, every one of our sports for their operating lines will be in the top half of the league in that respective line. So we've obviously made a tremendous investment in scholarships for all sports over the last few years, softball included. And so, all that to be said, I kind of took a step back and looked at it, because anytime you kind of go through this, you do, I think it's appropriate to do a little bit of a self-reflective look too, to see, okay, how are we supporting these student athletes? How are we supporting these programs? And, I took a step back and looked at our aggregated spend across athletics since net between now and the last year in Division II. It's a $5 million incremental spend between the last year in Division II and right now. We didn't sponsor any
That's
new sports.
that's one more, that's 1.2 million more every year of that.
On average, on average, right, exactly. And so no, so then the question becomes, how do you do that? Well, we're going to be over $3 million in self-generated revenues in athletics for the first time ever, in the current fiscal year that we're in, and we're not even done yet with the fiscal year. So we're breaking through self-generated, benchmarks, and we've never seen here before. And so again, when we talk about donor engagement and support and showing up to games, like, it all matters, and it helps us create the conditions to increase our spend in athletics. But also, okay, that we have 5 million, we're going to be over 3 million this year. Where's the rest of it come from? The university. University's helping us do this. So Dr. Rudin, Tina Livingston, the entire team, they're investing in us as well. And so, this is where now, are we in any way satisfied with the status quo about anything we do? No. I mean, let me be very clear about that. Like, we're going to continue to grow. and we're going to continue to push, and we're going to get, you know, we're going to make people uncomfortable as we continue to grow, because that's part of the process, but we're going to keep pushing, because at the end of the day, like, one of the things we, you know, kind of interestingly enough, we were meeting with a candidate for our VP for research position that's open, Dr. Donham, who's always been a great supporter of athletics. He's retiring at the end of the year, but he's done a great job in ushering us into R2 status. But he's, like I said, he's hanging it up. This is all public knowledge, so I'm not sharing anybody's secrets here. But we had a candidate on campus today, and, you know, we're kind of closing out. And I said, you know, one thing about this place is that every time we raise the bar, we meet the challenge. And so don't be afraid to raise the bar in terms of what we're doing here. And I think that's true in everything we're doing right now, and athletics included, is that let's continue to raise the bar and let's meet the challenge. It doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's, you know, not going to take some challenges. It doesn't mean that we don't need to get more people into the fold and get excited about what we're doing, but we always answer the bell. And so I'm not putting any limitations on what we can do here. And I think about that in any one of our sports in terms of how we evaluate what we're doing and what we're doing moving forward. And so, you know, I say all that because, you know, we're going to continue to look for ways to invest in all of our programs, softball included. But I do feel really good about the opportunity that we're going to put in front of a prospective head coaching candidate. And I think when you look at the trajectory of the university, the investment in the program, what already exists now, what can come as a byproduct of success in that space, and you know, just what we're doing in athletics overall, it's an exciting opportunity. But it's got to be someone who's excited about building something. It got to be someone who gets enjoyment and reward out of getting their hands a little dirty, right? Because that's one thing I also told the candidate, like, we're going to work and we're going to push, but this is a place where you get your hands in the dirt, and I don't care what level of the org chart you're on. And one thing I love about our leadership team here at East Texas is whether you're President Rudin, the athletics director, or anybody else on that leadership team, like, you get your hands in the dirt and you do work. And we're gritty, we're tough, we persevere, and we get stuff done. And so that's what's exciting about this.
Tell me this. What we know that the type of person that you're looking for as the next head coach of softball could come from anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I mean, how much experience would you prefer they have at the Division I level, knowing that there could be an outsider with a great deal of success at another level that might be interesting?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking that question because, you know, this is a true open national search. Like, we did not go into this with, you know, any, you know, targeted, preferred candidates in mind. That just was not what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think because of timing of things, our regular season ends a little earlier than most in the Southland because of our championship format. Mm-hmm. You know, portal dates are pushed back now because of rule changes in softball. It gives us a kind of a window of time to really kind of explore what we're looking for in our next head coach and really kind of dig into that with some intentionality and being very deliberate. You know, I will say this. You know, I'm not adverse to hiring someone who's never been a head coach. Obviously, the last head coaching search that we did here was Val King. She was had not had head coach experience, but obviously had a tremendous pedigree. You know, I would love to be able to hire someone who has sat in that chair. Mm-hmm. I do think that being in that role is you know, has got its own set of challenges with it. Mm-hmm. And so having some experience in that, I think, does help. I always am trying to look for someone that has, has some championship pedigree in them. Right. Mm-hmm. And cause it, you know, I explained this to our staff the other day when we were meeting, you know, I said, it takes an uncommon effort to win a championship, mm-hmm. you know, and I do think that times, There are folks that think, well, I showed up for 40 hours today and I worked hard in those 40 hours. And, you know, that's going to be enough. It's not for what we're trying to do. Right. And it doesn't mean that you're not meeting expectations. Like, okay, that's okay. But doing that, showing up for 40 hours and working hard, That's the minimum expectation, right? And so, and I don't mean that relative to, don't read that to mean that that's projecting on anybody in particular. We were talking about the macro environment in terms of what we're looking for, because it takes an unbelievable work ethic to win a championship. And so you got to be willing to put in more. You have to be willing to sacrifice. The effort's got to be incredible. There's a level of perseverance that has to exist there, and just accountability to the process of winning and what it takes to self, each other, the program, the process, what have you. So I say that because to have someone that's been through it and understand what it takes to win, and win at a high level, is, I think, important. And then, I think kind of back to just the work ethic, right? And just the just grinding on it. I think enough people probably have gotten to know me, like this is what I do for fun, right? I don't turn it off. And so, when I'm sitting at the house on the weekend, like I'm thinking about work and I'm thinking about how to make this thing better. And when I'm going to a ball game to watch my kids play, I'm thinking about this and how do we make it better. And when I go to a game, because I like to go to games for fun that aren't East Texas, that's, people ask me, like, what's your hobby? Sports. Well, that's your job. I said, no, that's my hobby too, right? Like, that's what I do. And
It's never work if you love what you
if you
do.
love it, right? Exactly. And I do. And so, same approach for this individual, right? Like, it's not a job, it's a passion, it's a lifestyle for what we do. And so, I think, I've also always kind of prescribed to the theory that if you can coach, you can coach, right? And I don't care if you're D1, D2, D3, NAI, JUCO, travel ball, high school. It doesn't matter, right? Like, do you have the qualities? Do you have the plan? Do you understand what you're trying to achieve? The vision and the just absolute sheer unrelenting willpower to get it done, and do what it takes to be successful. And everything that we're doing here, like I don't have to, it doesn't have to be someone from D1. Now, I will say this, and this is something that I've kind of taken away from just my experience here. And remember, I'm a guy that I was a student athlete at a D3 school. I went to grad school at a D2 school. I worked at a D3 school. I worked at an FCS institution. I've worked at a Power Four institution. So I've seen it at really from every level of the industry. And so I say all that because I do think you have to have an understanding of what it takes at a school that just doesn't have every resource under the sun. And for us, the good thing is that we're growing, right? And so, when your self-generated revenues are up, probably about 150%, when we get through this current fiscal year from 3 years ago, and it's up 77% from 2 years, like you're seeing growth. When you see your expenditures growing at the rate we talked about, when you see the university growing at the rate we're talking about, when you see six capital projects going on campus right now, that's totaling $200 million. And I mean, you get excited about that if that gets your engine going, right? And so but they have to have an understanding that we have to be really good stewards of the resources, what we have. We got to take good care of it. We have to have some pride, and we got to, again, get our hand in the dirt a little bit and have some pride of ownership in terms of what we've got here. So and just, again, be good stewards of the resources. And so I think having that perspective does help, just to be able to shape, the plan and the plan of execution, as you move along and do the work.
I think that your experience at all those different levels is it makes it easier for you to quantify the applicants that might come from D2 or D3 or wherever.
Right.
And then the follow-up question is, how many teams are you suddenly following in the playoffs? Because I know you've got mail already. I've got mail already, and I don't have anything to do with hiring or firing anybody.
No doubt, no doubt. I'll say this, like I had no doubt, and to date I have, it is clear that there is, that this is going to be a great opportunity for somebody, and it's of interest for sure.
All right, man.
I think
All right,
people
well, that
can see
tells who to watch
the
for another time. Great
potential.
stuff. Jim, what on else is going on? It's just the two of us today. So, I
I
mean,
know.
can
Yeah. So we
we
just
keep
wrapped up.
going, or have
Yeah.
we?
I mean, we just wrapped up Lucky's, which is our annual student athlete banquet. Credit to our SAC group for taking a lead on that and a number of folks within the department supporting them. You know, they continue to elevate what that looks like every year. So I hope people get a chance to see the pictures of that, because they did a great job and kids look great. And, you know, so it's a nice opportunity to kind of just, you know, put a little bit of a bow on the year. But again, it's getting kind of harder and harder because you got teams that are still going, right?
Sure.
And so, which is a good problem to have. It's a good
It's a
problem to have,
good
right?
problem to have.
So you got them still going. But yeah, and so that was fun. You know, it's the week before exams. There's some folks that are wrapping up classes this week, right? And then we've got finals next week. We'll have our grad reception for all of our student athlete graduates next week on Friday, which is the first day of the graduation exercises here in the field house. It is very likely this will be the last spring commencement or graduation exercises in the field house. Think about that for a second.
Wow, think
You know,
about that.
all the people that have walked through the field house and you know, walked across the stage, you know, kind of this is probably the last spring one, believe it or not.
Wow, how about that?
Pretty cool. Pretty cool to
All
think
right,
about.
man. Hey, it's been great to catch up on so much.
Yep.
There's always a lot going on, but there even in the off seasons, those just turn into recruiting seasons one way or
Yeah.
another.
I
So,
think we've learned pretty quickly around here that there's just really no off season. And you know what? That's okay. That's how we want it. You know, that means that we're still many times it means we're in play, right? So we're either competing or postseason or we're getting ready to crank it up. You know, football schedule's out. I'm sure everybody kind of saw that. I think we talked about that last time. I did get confirmation that the contract between our opponent and our linear TV provider for our opener has been signed. So there should be some announcement coming out soon about that. But I think people will be
excellent.
really excited about what's coming from that.
Okay, well, it might be early enough still in the summer that you could catch a game of the Macon Bacon. They play baseball there.
That's true. That's right. That's right.
So, okay, go figure it out. But that's something we could look forward to. Jim, it's always a pleasure, man.
Thank
And
you.
we'll see you soon, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
All right, folks, we're going to line up here. Charlie Chitwood and Jim Curry, thanks for your time tuning into this. We'll see you on campus real soon.